Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Report. Midland is nation's number one market for most stable growth. From staff reports. When it comes to housing markets with the most stable growth throughout the past 25 years, none of the 357 metropolitan areas nationwide compares to Midland. SmartAsset.com reports that Midland ranks as the number one market for growth and stability as home price growth from 1995 was 288%, fourth highest rate for this metric across the nation. The financial advisory website also reports during the same period that there was a 0% chance of a 5% loss in home price in the first 10 years after its purchase. The study showed that Texas markets dominated the top 10 with five markets. Joining Midland was Austin Round Rock, Georgetown, Odessa, Houston the Woodlands, Sugar Land, and Dallas. Smart Asset reported there was a 5% chance of the value of a home in Odessa dropping at least 5% in the first 10 years after its purchase. Odessa home prices also had the 22nd highest growth in the study, with overall home values jumping by 226% over those 25 years. City. Passenger numbers down 80% for the second straight month, by Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. The coronavirus pandemic and oil industry downturn again sent airline passenger numbers tumbling in May. The city of Midland reported last week that the number of people boarding an aircraft dropped by 82.3% compared to May of 2019. It is the second straight month with an 80% decline. In April, the drop was 89%. The back-to-back months have torpedoed any hope that fiscal year number of passengers will match those in 2018-19. The city's progress report shows a 26.5% drop in passengers year over year through May. At the end of February, airline boardings were up 7.7%. In terms of airlines, Southwest Airlines has been impacted most. In May, 2,992 boarded Southwest at Midland International. That compared to 26,667 in May of 2019. The airline least impacted was American Eagle, which boasted the most passengers, 4,505 in May, and the smallest year-over-year decline. County sales tax collection drops 33.76%, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Midland County suffered a 33.76% decline in its sales tax collection this month. The Texas Comptroller Office website shows the county received $3.519 million, which was down from $5.313 million in June. A sales tax collection is based on net revenue from 2 months previous. That means the June collection was based on April sales when the coronavirus pandemic and oil price downturn impacted spending inside Midland County. For the year, the county sales tax collection is down nearly $6 million, or by 15.83% year over year. In Odessa, the city sales tax collection declined 33.86% in June. The city of Midland reported a 23.7% decline. The opinion page. Opinion Extra from Rich Lowry, King Features Syndicate. Trump is ruining his presidency. 280 characters at a time. President Donald Trump is in the midst of a polling swoon, largely of his own making. It is true that events have taken a hand, a pandemic with a death toll of more than 100,000, a sharp recession, double-digit unemployment, and civil unrest would be the horsemen of the apocalypse for any incumbent president. Experiencing all of these in one term would make for treacherous political weather, experiencing them in the space of about 3 months is a perfect storm. And yet the president has worsened his position with his profligate tweeting, unpresidential conduct, and refusal or inability to step up to the magisterial aspect of his office. None of this is new, but it acquires a different significance playing out against a backdrop of crisis when the stakes and emotions are elevated. The president's poor ratings on coronavirus have much to do with his overexposure, squabbling with reporters, and meandering performances at his news briefings, all of which was unavoidable and indeed was eventually avoided by stopping the briefings. Quite often, Trump has blown the easy stuff while his team has performed admirably dealing with the more nettlesome issues of governance. Sounding sober from the presidential podium at a time of crisis should be easy. Any halfway accomplished conventional politician could do a pretty good job of it. Allocating ventilators, acquiring personal protective equipment, and ramping up testing on a rapid basis in the middle of a pandemic, when the traditional apparatus of government isn't up to it, is hard, and the Trump team has managed it over the past couple of months. The press doesn't tell that story, and regardless, it gets overwhelmed by the constant drama emanating from the Oval Office. In the case of George Floyd, there's nothing Trump could have done to stop his killing. He's not the Minnesota governor or the Minneapolis mayor, but he's been hurt by his reflexively combative posture. His philosophy is never to give ground, so he has little appreciation for the occasional need for defensive politics, to play against type, to preempt arguments against him, to couple a hard line with a soft sentiment. As one of the most compelling showmen of our time, his metric for success is different than that of standard politicians or political operatives. He wants coverage, good, bad, or indifferent. The St. John's Church visit might have been poorly thought out and politically counterproductive, but who can doubt that it was a jaw-dropping spectacle? By this standard, the period between mid-March and mid-April was an astonishing success. As the online news outlet Axios has pointed out, Trump dominated former Vice President Joe Biden on cable news mentions, social media interactions, web traffic, and Google searches. But it hasn't helped his political standing. Trump is never going to change, but in the 2016 campaign, he was able to adjust and modulate at moments of peril just enough to see it through. This is one of those moments of peril. Losing to Biden would mean all the changes he pursued through administrative action would be subject to reversal. It would mean, assuming Democrats take the Senate, too, that his judicial appointments would immediately begin to be counteracted. It would mean that immigration enforcement would be drastically curtailed, and it would mean that Trump would suffer the highest profile and most consequential defeat that is possible to experience in American national life. Of course, nothing is inevitable. It's only June, and he's still relatively strong on the economy, but he has created his own headwind. If Trump loses in November, it won't be because he pursued a big legislative reform that was a bridge too far politically. It won't be because he adopted an unorthodox policy mix that alienated his own side. It won't even be because he was overwhelmed by events, challenging though they have been. It will mostly be because he took his presidency and drove it into the ground, 280 characters at a time. Here's the guest view opinion from the Dallas Morning News. Texas GOP needs to save itself from itself. To be successful, political parties need to be big tents. They need to include a large cross-section of voters capable of winning elections. But to be broadly appealing parties also needs to know who to eject from the tent. And throughout history, we have seen that parties can improve their standing if they have the courage to draw a moral line against those who harbor malice towards others. That's where the Texas Republican Party is now. This month, GOP county chairs of Bayer, Comal, Nueces, and Harrison counties shared vile conspiracy theories on social media that alleged George Floyd's death was staged and financed by billionaire George Soros to undermine African American support for President Donald Trump. Appropriately, the posts drew quick condemnation from top statewide GOP officials, most notably Governor George Abbott, who, through a spokesman, said, "These comments are disgusting and have no place in the Republican Party or in public discourse." The very next day, the Harris County GOP chair-elect announced that he would not take office in the midst of a furor over a posting of a Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. quote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," on a background with a banana. Five county leaders is bad enough, but additional work by the Texas Tribune uncovered another seven GOP county chairpersons who had posted racial or conspiratorial social media posts in one day. Recent, one of the worst, asked 21 puzzling questions about Floyd's death, including, "Can someone really not breathe when someone kneels on his neck? And is the victim really able to speak for considerable periods of time if he can't breathe? And why did the kneeling officer appear completely cool and calm as if he was posing for the camera?" Such moments should be a clarion call for statewide Texas Republican leaders of conscience to resist this filth. These county chairs represent the worst instincts of modern politics, the unholy trifecta of conspiracy nonsense, racial animus, and the belief that the ends always justify the means, no matter how cruel. Texas GOP has seen other moments and pushed back successfully. Less than 2 years ago, factions in the Tarrant County GOP led a racist bid to oust County Party Chairman, Vice Chairman Shahid Shafi, a Muslim, a trauma surgeon, and member of the South Lake City Council. The whisper campaign against him included baseless claims that he supports Sharia law and is tied to terrorist groups. Shafi held onto the seat after he received support from Abbott, Senator Ted Cruz, Land Commissioner George P. Bush, and other Texas Republicans. Calling out hatred and working to purge it from party politics matters. In the 1960s, William F. Buckley, Jr., the founder of the National Review, won a battle of ideas to purge from the early conservative movement the extremism of the John Birch Society. Our nation must not allow slander and enmity, whether from the White House or the Lone Star State, to further fray our moral fabric. When ideas and good faith take back seats to disparagement and lies, then the soul of political discourse and civil society are at extreme risk. As Americans and Texans, we must not allow that to go unchallenged. Letters to the Editor. 142nd District Court. Runoff candidates go the extra mile. One of the runoff candidates for the 142nd District Court, David Rogers, has put time and effort in continuing his candidacy for election. He maintains a vital interest in the work necessary to bring fairness, promptness, and reasoned judgment to the job. He has tried more than 130 cases in his many years as a defense attorney. He is obviously skilled, talented, and dedicated, and wants your vote. Your vote for David Rogers is appreciated. Runoff elections are usually poorly attended, and that is sad. The candidates in a runoff have gone an extra mile and deserve the same consideration as they garnered in the first ballot. Please vote. Signed, Buddy Sipes. Hospital sales tax. Community health care clinics are vital. Over the past 30 years, Midland Health, that is, the Midland County Hospital District, has increased medical and health care services throughout our community, recruiting and retaining primary care physicians, as well as many specialists, partnering with the Texas Tech Medical School, thereby enlarging the medical professionals among us, providing mental health services to patients recovering from addictions and those experiencing mental health crises, to name some biggies. Community clinics supported by Midland Health are vitally important. under the umbrella of Midland Community Healthcare Services, the Viola Coleman Clinic on Florida Street, together with a prenatal clinic and a children's clinic, take healthcare directly to the community, serving anyone, of course, but primarily targeting underserved folks in Midland. Last year, these three clinics totaled more than 60,000 patient visits. Current federal funding, upon which we depend for the provision of these services, begins in 2020 to diminish dramatically. To offset that loss, the Midland County Hospital District is proposing a 0.25% increase in sales tax. To keep these vital health services and to share the cost with all who shop in Midland County, please vote for Proposition A in the election July 4th. Say yes to health care. Jane Wolfe. Quality health care is a priority. As a father of small children and as a diabetic who once walked into the Midland Memorial ER with a blood sugar level of 608, having a quality local hospital available to all is among my top priorities. When your child breaks an arm, or your mom has a heart attack, or your friend has a stroke, you better hope that your local ER is available and top-notch to care for your family. Additionally, as Midlanders, we always look out for the least among us, and I believe this election is about just that. In order to properly care for the health care needs of our community and for those who need it most, we must pass Proposition A. John Trishity III.
Obituaries. Dorothy May Ames Hoover. Dorothy May Ames Hoover entered heaven on June 9, 2020, at age 107 and a half of natural causes. She was born December 9, 1912, on the family farm near Chase, Kansas, to Lena Joanna Lanterman Ames and Wilbur Russell Ames, Sr. Dorothy graduated from high school in Chase, Kansas. She attended Sterling College, Bethany College in Lindsberg, Kansas, and completed her B.S. in English and secondary education at Fort Hays State College in Hays, Kansas. Dorothy married Merle S. Hoover in Claflin, Kansas on July 25, 1934, and honeymooned in Little Rock, Arkansas, and enjoyed the hot springs. Her husband preceded her in death in 1985. Although they did not have children, Dorothy enjoyed many years of teaching piano and voice lessons to school children. Dorothy also played the violin and gave violin lessons. Dorothy taught country school, grades 1 through 8, north of Claflin, and taught at Claflin High School during the World War II era. She was a member of Delta Kappa Gamma Sorority and served as president of the Beta Chapter Group organized in Garden City, Kansas. The Alpha Chapter was organized in Hays, Kansas. She was also a worthy matron in Eastern Star and participated in numerous other groups and organizations. She loved to sing and was active in the Methodist Church and frequently was the choir director. She also loved to garden and raised vegetables and flowers. She enjoyed crocheting and made her own jackets and hats. Dorothy was the oldest of four children and is survived by her youngest sister, Helen Dolores Ames Woodruff, age 92. She was predeceased by her brother, Wilbur Russell Ames Jr., and sister Verda Evelyn Ames Hufford. Dorothy is also survived by numerous nieces and nephews and friends, including Bill Ames, Carolyn Bellamy and husband John, Ralph Prager and wife Sherry, John Ames, David Ames, Johnette Curtis, Jan Oberl and husband Kent, Stephen Hopkins and wife Janelle. The family would like to extend a special thanks to Cynthia Hill, N.P., Visiting Angels, and Brookdale Midland Senior Living and Hospice of Midland. Interment will be in Lyons, Kansas, with memorial service at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joy Lynn Spoor. Joy Lynn O'Brien Spoor went home to Jesus June 9, 2020, at 11:11 a.m., surrounded by her loving family, after an unexpected and short-lived battle with cancer at 86 years of age. Graveside service will be held at Flatwood Cemetery on FM 2526 Eastland, Texas, with Jody Forbus of Carbon Community Baptist Church officiating. Joy was born in Galveston, Texas, October 30, 1933, to Floyd R. Sr. and Grace Y. O'Brien. She graduated from Ball High School and married her high school sweetheart, Robert W. Spoor, the son of Robert N. and Bernice Bohr, also of Galveston, on September 1, 1951. Joy and Buddy were married for 68 years, and though they lived all over Texas, have always missed the island they were born on. Predeceased by her parents, Floyd and Grace O'Brien, sister-in-law, Lolette O'Brien of Palestine, Texas, and brother-in-law, Paul Head of Galveston, Texas. She is survived by her husband, Robert W. Buddy Spohr, her daughter, Donna L. Howard, and son-in-law, George Dan Howard of Carbon, Texas, her brother, Floyd Russell O'Brien Jr. of Palestine, and her sister-in-law, Elizabeth Head of Galveston. Meemaw, as she was known, was also survived by her grandchildren, Justin Daniel Howard and wife Samantha, Kaylee Paige Howard, and three sweet angel babies, as she called them, her great-grandchildren, Chloe, Kenny, and Sadie Grace, and many nieces and nephews who lovingly referred to her as Auntie Joy. She loved family and persuaded Buddy to follow her daughter and family wherever they lived after they retired. Joy was a detailed person and loved to talk to people anywhere, anytime, from which she received her nickname, Talks-a-Lot, from her son-in-law, Dan. And, of course, she never met a stranger. She would help anyone who asked her. She was very close to her daughter, and they were famously known for their Wednesdays of hair, nails, eating out, and lots of shopping. She will be greatly missed by all her family. Wyeth Leonard Boots Good. Wyeth Leonard Boots Good was born July 12, 1929, in San Angelo, Texas, to parents Homer and Jesse Lee Good. He grew up in San Angelo and graduated from San Angelo High School and received an associate's degree from San Angelo Junior College. He graduated with a B.S. degree in geology from the University of Texas in Austin in 1953 and did postgraduate work at UT Austin and Texas Tech. From 1946 to 1952, he served in the Naval Reserve, and on October 31, 1952, he married Louise Geyer Good, also from San Angelo. From 1953 to 1970, he worked for Marathon Oil Company, spending 1956 to 1960 in Guatemala and 1960 to 1962 in Libya. The Good family moved to Midland in 1962. In 1970, Mr. Good opened an office for Amarillo Oil Company and Pioneer Natural Gas in Midland, and served as district manager until 1977, when he resigned to become an independent consulting geologist. Mr. Good was a member of the Wildcatters, AAPG, American Association of Petroleum Geologists, the West Texas Geological Association, and the IPAA, Independent Petroleum Association of America. He was qualified as a certified petroleum geologist and served as an expert witness in legal court cases. In 1983, he served as president of the board of directors of the Midland Country Club after being on the board since 1981. He was a member of the First Baptist Church and an active supporter of Wycliffe Bible Translators, Incorporated. His sons, William and Richard, his parents, and his brother, Buddy Good, preceded him in death. He is survived by his wife of 67 years. A private graveside service was held on Friday, June 12, 2020, in San Angelo, Texas. Memorials are suggested to the Jail Ministry of First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue, Midland, Texas 79701, or a charity of your choice. Family and friends can share online condolences at www.harper-funeralhome.com.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 14th, 2020. Section A. Social Media Gives Protests Staying Power, by Ruth Campbell. There have been protests over the decades demanding social change, an end to wars, divestment, and against police brutality, but University of Texas Permian Basin history professor Derek Katzum cannot recall an instance of them being this intense with this many people in this many cities. But it's not unprecedented, Katzum said. The protests and marches have been sparked by the killing of George Floyd, an unarmed African-American man who was killed by police May 25th during an arrest in Minneapolis. One of the officers, Derek Chauvin, put a knee to Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes. Chauvin was charged with third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. Officers Thomas Lane, J. Alexander King, and Tao Tao. Were charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder, and all three officers were fired from the Minneapolis Police Department. Katzam is the Kathleen Cosper Dunnigan Professor in the Humanities and Senior Research Associate and Visiting Professor 2019 at Rhodes University in Grahamstown, South Africa. He noted that while there have been other sustained protests that lasted longer than this, the numbers of people and places are historically significant. This is an impressive sustained run of protest, but not unprecedented, Katzam stated in an email. Obviously, we could quibble about definitions, but certainly during the civil rights era, there were lots of protests that lasted as long or longer than this. The Montgomery bus boycott lasted more than a year. The sit-ins, freedom rides, Albany campaign, and Birmingham protests lasted months. Depending on whether one identifies anti-war protests during the Vietnam era as a series of distinct protests or as connected protests, those endured for years. Now, in recent history, this is somewhat rare and looks like it has legs, and also is morphing, so that in a lot of ways these protests are less about any individual case than they are a function of a specific case leading to a boiling point. This isn't the first police killing or assault of an unarmed black man, but Katzam explained the video played a large role, especially since this is video in its entirety. We saw a man murdered over the course of nearly 9 minutes while he blurted out the now sadly familiar words, "I can't breathe," and while he begged for his mother. Camera phones plus social media equal a changed dynamic in America, especially with issues like policing, Katzam stated. And of course, other cases have led to both protests and movements. Think of Black Lives Matter, for instance. And then, of course, as the protests really kicked off, there were more instances of brutality and more cell phones, and then violence during some of the marches, sometimes initiated by a few protesters, but oftentimes initiated by police or by provocateurs, led to more social media attention. Asked why people don't intervene instead of just taking video, Katzam said, in a lot of cases, the best thing someone can do is record. If they intervene, the event is not documented. If they get harmed, there may be no upside. And intervening with police could literally be a death sentence. In some cases, activists are actually trained to keep filming and not to intervene, he stated. In South Africa, where Katzam has spent a lot of time living and working, he said the social media dynamic is essentially the same. Cell phones are pretty much ubiquitous in many parts of South Africa, though less so in some of the poorest areas. And so similar dynamics play out with regard to police, but also with regard to racism, harassment, crime, and the whole range of issues that would have merely pitted one person's word against another's, even just a few years back, he wrote. Odessa attorney Gavin Norris said, as a lawyer, he looks at the facts, and this moment looks a lot like the Selma to Montgomery, Alabama march in 1965, when state troopers clubbed protesters and fatally shot a demonstrator trying to protect his mother, the History.com website details. It was a turning point in the civil rights movement. Norris, an organizer of the recent marches in Odessa, said, "We've seen videos of African-American men dying in America, but this one was especially ghastly. We've seen Tamir Rice, Philando Castile, Laquan McDonald, some of Mike Brown, Eric Garner, Walter Scott. We've seen the videos of that, but this is the first time, George Floyd, that we've seen a video that has truly shocked the conscience of the nation. And by that I mean when you look at a person who is lying on the ground begging and pleading and calling his mom for 8 minutes, and you can see him on the video die, for the most part die on video, that shocks the conscience, Nora said. That semblance is the same thing as the Edmund Pettus Bridge incident, where during the 1960s civil rights movement, the country generally was aware of the issues that were going on in the South, but you could always excuse those because it's not happening here. You don't have to see it. But when the Edmund Pettus Bridge incident happened there in Selma, that's one of the first times that the civil rights movement, the brutality, the horror, the tragedy, was filmed live and recorded live for the entire country to see, Nora said. It was at that moment, when the entire country got to see firsthand what was going on, the brutality of those marchers being beaten and bloodied by police, that shocked the conscience. And that was one of the real, in addition to everything else, the real push nationally for civil rights change. And I believe this really is our Selma moment, he added. Another aspect, Nora said, is that people can sometimes justify the shooting of Rice or Scott by saying if they hadn't had a toy gun in Rice's case or hadn't fled from the police, as with Scott, they wouldn't have been killed. I think every incident before this, people could really find a way to justify it away. But it's very hard to just away a video with George Floyd when you take into context if at that point when the knee was on his neck, what he was supposed to be doing. You can't justify that. I think that's what has really caught everyone's attention across the board, no matter your ethnicity, hue, or socioeconomic background, Nora said. Nora said he thinks the local In Defense of Black Lives movement will go on, and the group has begun meeting regularly. The march was just the first step in our process. I know that by the end of the month, we'll have a forum to hear from the community, he said. Issues that are compiled will be brought to Odessa Police Department Chief Mike Gerke, he said. Plans are to start addressing those needs from the most critical on down. That's what our next plan is. That's what will happen this month before the end of the month. So that's what's in the works now, and we'll continue to get people motivated. We've said, I think ad nauseum at this point, that protests without policy or without follow-up were not being effective, and our goal is just really to be effective. So we're looking at that. Also, translating. And as that inspires into the education issues, as well as the issues with the school board, with Doyle Woodall, but also the systemic issues within the education system, Nora said. Woodall has since resigned from the board. He was under fire for what some considered offensive Facebook posts, including a noose. The words above it said, if we want to make America great again, we will have to make evil people fear punishment again. While making up 4% of ECISD student population, African American students represent 48% of out-of-school suspensions, according to the school district. Asked why he thinks this happens, Norris said, it's unconscious bias. We live in a very interesting state where we are so socialized to fear the stigma of black men and black boys or black children that when they're loud or boisterous or something that kind of fits their culture, that's being belligerent or disrespectful. And based on fear, plus a lack of understanding culturally, we'll say, well, they need to be punished harder and more severely, Norris said. He added that he briefly taught at Permian before he started practicing law, but never wrote up any students to show a level of respect. But discipline problems didn't really occur. If students understand that you care, they understand that they'll be treated equally, they understand that you don't have fear or concern about them for whatever socialized issues that you have. I think those go a long way with children, and they will respond accordingly to how you treat them. So if we start treating all of our children just as if they're no different, that goes a long way. I think the fact that we don't have enough African American educators in ECISD, that goes a long way as well, Norris said. He added that students felt more comfortable coming to him with issues than they did with some of their white teachers, simply because I look like them. 18-year-old Dominique Nelson was one of the demonstrators at a couple of recent marches. He said one of the leaders, Emily LaShaw, contacted him on Twitter asking if he'd be interested in having the protest. I just led the actual walk, and I spoke to the cameras and stuff, but she was probably the mastermind of it, Nelson said. He added that this was the first time he had done something like that. I thought that it was necessary, and no one was really going to do something like that in Odessa, so whenever she gave me the opportunity to be part of it, I just really wanted to, Nelson said. He said he was upset and angry about Floyd's killing. Everything that's happening now because that's what's going on, and it's a really big problem, and they wonder why people loot and why people are burning down buildings and stuff like that. But there's years and years of anger that have been building up by the people. So this is just one of the most recent times that it's been able to come out, Nelson said. He said he wished he could have a role in some of the larger protests occurring worldwide. I wish that I could have an active role and speak in front of a crowd of people who are willing to listen and people who can do things about it. It would be really cool to be part of that bigger role, Nelson said. He added that he was surprised by the number of people who turned out for the In Defense of Black Lives March. I expected 100, not 260, Nelson said. He also was pleased to meet lawyers, doctors, and educators who took part. Nelson is studying phlebotomy at Odessa College. I'm just really excited to be part of everything that's been going on, and I'm hoping that there's more protests and it gets closer and closer to actual progress. Diane Jordan, a senior lecturer of sociology at UTPB, said she thinks the staying power of the protests is because of social media. We've had protests for hundreds of years, and the establishment is always able to quash protests because they have the power to do that. It's the same way as museums, that we will tell the people what they like. We will choose what gets shown. Well, that's how street art got started. That's how lowrider art got started. That's their way of screaming to have their voice heard because they are not included in the establishment. Social media has changed that. It's the same way with musicians. Who chooses what music gets listened to? Well, the producers and the supporters. Well, now there's YouTube and Vimeo. So that lets the people decide what they like. And it's the same way with art. Now an artist can print their stuff on the internet and let people see their work. It's the same thing that the hashtag and the protests. You can't shut the internet down. You cannot. You cannot stop that voice that social media has allowed people to have, Jordan said. And the other thing that I think is important is that sometimes you think you're the only person who feels a certain way or believes a certain thing, especially if it maybe goes against the established message. But if you have access to social media, you realize there's hundreds of other thousands of people who also have that same experience. It makes you feel powerful to realize you're not alone. It gives you the worth to realize that you're not wrong just because you don't agree with the established message, she added. Scavenger hunt coming to downtown. by Michael Merlot. After multiple Odessa summer events were canceled due to the pandemic, Downtown Odessa Incorporated has been adapting their plans to incorporate safer activities for locals to enjoy the city, including a two-week-long scavenger hunt starting June 22nd. Downtown Odessa Executive Director Lawana Lambert said that she spent a day incognito walking around the downtown area, taking photos of downtown landmarks and businesses in preparation for the Oh Say Can You See revitalization hunt. She narrowed them down to 5 photos for each week, and all of them are within the downtown footprint. She said the idea was in response to the cancellation of the 25th annual Firecracker Fandango, which is an Independence Day festival that features live music, free activities for kids, food trucks, car shows, and a huge firework display. Just as the community was upset by the canceling of the Fandango, we're all pretty upset by it too, Lambert said. There's a lot downtown that we want people to see. Lambert said the scavenger hunt is a way for families to social distance and spend some time downtown with each other. She said that the hunt will engage people with the progress of downtown Odessa and will also be an early celebration of the 4th of July without fireworks. The pictures will be located within the north side of 1st Street and the south side of 10th Street, to the east side of Bernice Avenue, to the west side of Adams. The first set of photos will be released at 8 a.m. June 22nd, and submissions are due on June 27th at 10 p.m. Lambert said that people have to take a selfie in front of the landmark matching the picture, write the address or the name of the building in an email, including contestant contact information, and send it to downtownevents@odessa-tx.gov. The first 20 correct submissions will get prizes with values of around $100. Week 1 winners will be announced June 29th at 10 a.m. The second group of 5 photos will be released on June 28th at 8 a.m. and submissions for week 2 will be due July 3rd at 8 a.m. and week 2 winners will be announced and given prizes at 10 a.m. that same day. Prizes for the scavenger hunt have mostly been paid for by downtown business, Lambert said, and each contestant who sends a correct submission will be added to a drawing for the grand prize, which has a value of around $1,000. The drawing for the grand prize will be noon July 3rd at the downtown Odessa office. The pictures will be released on downtown Odessa's website along with multiple news outlets. Quick hits. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 238. Ector County negative 2,999 out of 3,392 tested, with 155 pending, 6 deaths. Midland County 201 confirmed, 13 deaths. Texas 86,011 confirmed with 1,442,950 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,957. U.S. cases, 2,038,344 total confirmed and 114,625 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Voting registration deadline. To be able to vote in the joint primary runoff election July 14th, you must be a registered voter. If you are not a registered voter, or if you need to update your address with the voter registrar, you have until Monday to do so in person, or the application must be postmarked Monday. You may also submit an application online with the Secretary of State at the following email addresses: Ector County, tinyurl.com/YB9GAP35, Midland County, tinyurl.com/Y3NMFRMY, or the Secretary of State at www.sos.state.tx.us. Call the elections office if you are unsure of your voting status. Ector County Office, 1010 East 8th Street, Suite 101, Ector County Annex, 498-4030, or Midland County Office, 2110 A Street, Midland County Annex, 688-4890. Obituaries for Sunday, June 14th. Jewel Lavina Cooper. Jewel Lavina Cooper, known to her family as Lavina, passed away peacefully in her sleep June 8th. She was born August 22nd, 1928, in Snyder to Jewel and Alton Robertson. She married Doyle O. Cooper, and they were married for 49 years. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. James Wesley Wes Hunt. James Wesley Wes Hunt, 68, of Odessa, passed away June 8th. He was born July 17th in Weatherford to Otika Hunt and Glenn T. Hunt. He married Mary Zielinski in 1966. Wes is survived by his wife, Mary Hunt, his son, Jed Disler, and wife, Holly. His brother and sisters, Sherry McDermott and husband Stuart, Roy Hunt and wife Susan, Sue Hunt, Tommy Beth Brooks and husband Gary, his mother Otika Hunt, a grandson and several nieces, as well as an adopted son Chris Garrett and wife Julie. He is preceded in death by his father Glenn T. Hunt. A memorial of his life will be scheduled at a later date due to the COVID-19 rules. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Carl Layton Milam. Carl Bub Layton Milam, 86, passed away June 12th. He was predeceased by his wife, Emma Lou, his daughter, Norma Renee Milam, his mother, his father, his brother, Norman Milam, a brother-in-law, Daryl Dixon, and a sister-in-law, Juanita Ellison. Bub was born September 2nd, 1933 in Early. He married Emma Lou in 1952. Bub is survived by his son, Carl Gordon Milam, and wife, Shelley, daughter, Sherry Milam, sister, Peggy Dixon, sister-in-law, Gloria Milam, four grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren. Visitation will be held at Schaefer Nichols Funeral Home from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, June 15th. Graveside services will be conducted at Crane County Cemetery Tuesday, June 16th at 10 a.m., presided over by the Reverend David Bryant. Donations can be sent to Home Hospice of Odessa or any charity of your choice.
Hello, this is Michael reading Dear Abby, Monday, June 15th. Mom's friends abandon her after third child is born. Dear Abby, I recently welcomed my third child, a baby boy who was wanted and planned. We are overjoyed. Our two daughters are just under 10 years old. Over the years, my social circle has consisted mostly of the parents of my daughter's friends. Abby, my news was met with mixed reactions. Some were thrilled for my pregnancy, while others were shocked. One woman even told me, "I'm just not in that phase of my life anymore." After my son was born, I didn't get visits or even a phone call from some of them. I announced his birth on social media and mailed out a beautiful announcement, but he hasn't been acknowledged, nor have I been checked on. I know he won't really be affected by this, and I'm trying to focus on the positives. We have a big family on both sides, and many people within our community have warmly welcomed him. But I have been a good friend to these women, supported them in their times of need, and even reached out during this pandemic to check on them in an effort to reconnect. I'm so disappointed. What am I supposed to say to these friends when I run into them again? New mom again. Dear mom, when you encounter them, be cordial. Make polite conversation and ask how they and their families are doing. If they inquire, tell them you and your family are well, then move on, recognizing you are dealing with individuals who are solely centered upon themselves. Do not attempt to revive a relationship with anyone who cares so little about you that they would treat you as they have. But do recognize how fortunate you are that you know not to invest more of your time or yourself in them. Dear Abby, I divorced my abusive ex-husband, and I am happily remarried. I have a son and daughter from my first marriage. They saw a lot of physical and emotional abuse when they were young. I stayed in the marriage to keep the family together until I realized my children were being hurt in the process. My son witnessed more of the abuse than my daughter. My son has constantly brought up the past and has never been able to make a decent living. He's married with three children, and they have lived with his mother-in-law for years. I have apologized many times for what happened in the past and asked for forgiveness. I don't know what else I can do. I always send birthday and holiday money, telling them I love them, but for some reason, they have stopped answering my calls or responding to my texts. I call them three or four times a year. They used to call me when they needed money, but now they don't call at all. Should I stop sending birthday checks? They missed Mother's Day, and my heart is broken. I don't know what I've done wrong. Paying for the past. Dear Paying, you will never know what you did wrong unless one of your adult offspring decides to tell you. I hope you realize that you are being abused again, this time by two passive-aggressive adults. You are not the reason your son lives with his mother-in-law. As to your daughter, who knows her reason for radio silence? Please stop flogging yourself. Start living your own life. Bind up that broken heart and focus on happiness with your new husband, because as things stand, you're not going to find much with these two. Send cards if you must, but omit the money. If you do, I'm sorry to say, you may hear from them sooner.
Jacqueline Bigger's Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Aries. Happy birthday for Monday, June 15, 2020. Clever and charming, you are not prone to nerves so much as others in your Gemini tribe. You will get what you want this year, and finances will be good. You are on an especially winning streak. If single, you are attractive to many and have your pick. The pursuit may be more interesting to you than the end. If attached, you are adored by your partner and must reciprocate. Leo loves romance. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Today brings a competitive streak that motivates you. You pursue that which you believe in regardless of the consequences. Seek help and advice from longtime friends. A special animal companion needs extra time and attention. Tonight, listen to the still small voice within. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Think abundance. Finish what you started at work. Visualize the future and look beyond the immediate. Clear up odds and ends. Take an inventory on where things are going in your life. It's a great time for self-promotion. Tonight, online shopping finds you a treasure. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Today favors activity within groups and organizations. You become intensely involved. Ambitious people become worthwhile role models. Your social and romantic prospects will blossom. It is a perfect time to purchase new finery or pursue creative work. Tonight, online retail therapy. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. If you yearn for fame and fortune, the path should open today, guiding you in that direction. Recognition is coming your way. There will be avenues for expressing your highest potential. Your career path is expanding. Tonight, it is a time to choose worthwhile goals. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Grandparent and grandchild relationships provide special joy and build happy memories. It is a wonderful time to learn another language or to study a foreign cuisine. Explore your options. Look within to discover what direction you truly want to take. Tonight, others will be especially supportive. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Honor the memory of those who have passed into the Summerland. You will feel free to release and move forward. Communicate honestly with a partner in regard to shared finances. Tonight, love connections are a source of healing and encouragement. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 2 stars. Discussions revolve around the future of a partnership. People close to you are sentimental. Control your emotional impulses and keep a sense of humor if you are upset. Legal matters might require some attention. Tonight, you will be especially responsive and sensitive. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. A new environment and new routine are possible. Be receptive to changes, but wait to see which way the wind blows before moving forward. It is not the time to make a sudden decision about adopting a new animal companion. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. A lost love may return to become a treasured friend. Accept invitations or plan an online gathering. Today promises a change of heart and some excitement. You always enjoy a partner who poses a challenge. Tonight, follow your brightest dreams. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. A residential move may be considered, and relatives are experiencing some changes. Dynamic and demanding people approach you. You might feel that you are being swept along by the ideas of another. Adapt. Back away from confrontations. Tonight, a new friend prospect. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. Today favors initiating meetings, conversations, and messages. You are energetic but must take care to control anger and impatience. Enthusiasm is at a peak. Expect the sense of having outgrown an old goal or familiar associate. Tonight, changes in loyalties. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Friends help you secure work, explore new prospects, and improve your overall security. Debts or other obligations generated by someone close to you can affect your personal income. Adjust and use care if entering into a new financial partnership. Tonight, you exude a captivating compassion. Born today, psychologist Erik Erikson, 1902, actress Helen Hunt, 1963, rapper, actor Ice Cube, 1969.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.